This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs.
Well, hello to everybody out there at TFMR. It is Good Friday, April the 10th, 2020. U.S. markets are closed, and that means we have a three-day weekend. And if you are a longtime fan or member of TFMR, you know what that means. It's a three-day weekend. Let's welcome in my pal, the great Jim Willie. Jim, happy Easter.
Oh, thank you very much. And a client in Europe made sure that it was a happy Easter yesterday. Very nice. Thank you.
You get a ham?
You know, I'm glad it's not April 1st because every day feels like April Fool's Day.
Well, that's for sure. This is such an unbelievable year. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, and again, I should mention, for those of you that don't know, Jim, of course, is the editor of the Hat Trick Letter. Bi-monthly publication?
No, it's monthly, once a month, mid-month, okay. late in the month.
All right. And you can find that at golden-jackass.com. We'll talk more about the services Jim provides toward the end of the call. But obviously, we've known Jim for a long time. We try to do these things three or four times a year just to pick his massive brain about all that he's hearing, reading, seeing, and everything else. Jim, for God's sake, I'm thinking back to the last time we spoke, which was, I think, New Year's Eve. And it's just like, this is just crazy. I've been telling people that, to me, 2020 is going to be one of those generational type things. You know, it's like, for ancient old people like you, the Kennedy assassination was one of those things, right?
I was 12 when that happened.
There you go. And it's like you always remember where you were. And in a sense, it kind of closed off, you know, the Happy Days era of the 50s. And, you know, it led you to Vietnam and Woodstock and, you know, Watergate, you know, and all that stuff. And then, you know, for a lot of people like my age, young, you know, vibrant, virile people.
You're not as young as you think.
That's
so
true.
Go ahead.
9/11 was like that, right? You know, where were you? And the whole world changed. You know, we're taking off our shoes in the airport and the Patriot Act and all this kind of stuff. And now here we are. It's almost like there's a world pre-2020 and a world post-2020. I mean, we're only, 3 months into it, right? 100 days at this point. We've had a lot of things that have happened. But one of the things that now has come to fruition in rapid order has been QE to infinity, my friend. You and I don't even know how many times. I mean, four times a year for the last 10 years. So 40 times we've talked about the Tower of Babel, right? And QE to infinity. And
we got that right. We got that spot on.
And now here we are, Jim. I mean, the onset of it has come so fast. What are your thoughts as you watch all this unfold?
That's a very difficult question to answer quickly and succinctly. I'm just going to have a flow of thought here.
Go for it.
I knew that we would see shit hit the fan when I saw repo ramp up. Back in September and October, I said this is going to be moving toward $500 billion a day. And some people thought, well, that'll be pretty hard to do. And I said, well, you just let it unfold. You'll see. They'll make it wider and wider, meaning, you know, not just Wall Street banks, but the second tier was the hedge funds. Now it's foreign banks, and now it's foreign central banks. So it's almost universal now. I mean, you could call it infinite QE, but now it's infinite universal QE. Okay, I knew that it would move toward $500 billion. I even said, you know, give it time. Who knows? January, February, March, who knows? It'll get up to $1 trillion a day and be out of control, and we will be fully in Weimar America. But, you know, I didn't really have a good grip on what would the rest of the situation be. Would there be food shortages? Would there be a massive unemployment? Would there be a block off of – this is what I did think. There would be a block of imports to the United States because they would not want our dollar anymore. I've got a hint. This is not a solid piece of information, but I've got a hint from one of my jackass colleagues with great connections that a lot of this began Craig, when China in November and December let it be known to the United States that we're not going to accept your dollar anymore for shipments.
Huh.
And the United States said, well, wait a minute, the dollar is valid. And they said, well, the Chinese said, we don't like what's going on with your dollar. I'm ad-libbing here. The Chinese might have said, we're looking at the destruction at your bond market. We're looking at the obscenity of your repo window. And this looks like an invalid currency that we really don't accept anymore. And then the United States turned around and said, well, F you, we'll give you a virus. We'll screw you up. We'll mess you up. Okay, that's what I think the sequence was. And go back a little further. Was it not August that the trade talks ended?
Yeah.
And the United States backed away, blamed China, and nobody really talked about what the disagreement was. Well, I've been mentioning it steadily. The Chinese did not want to have a 20% upward revaluation of their currency, the RMB, which would have damaged their trade, entire trade sector,
right?
Their export market, because everything would, like shipping to Thailand would cost 20% more. Shipping to Korea would cost 20% more. And the Chinese were only willing to do that if the Americans agreed to double the gold price. So that was the bargaining stumbling block.
Hmm.
That was August. Okay, well, a couple months later, they told us that they weren't going to accept the dollar. And a couple months later, we gave them a virus to mess them up. Okay, you know, that's the sequence I see. The sequence most people see is, oh, China had a really big problem. They have an explosion of the virus. Yeah, well, you know, right before the explosion of the virus, the U.S. military attended a very strange military Olympic Games in Wuhan. I mean, right a few months before that, the Chinese burned 100 million sick pigs. You think that might have affected their air quality with bacteria? Do you think? Okay. And, you know, they also have these rollouts of 5G, which is loaded with controversy and disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got numerous things that are happening at the same time, in addition to what I call the media pandemic.
What do you mean?
They're fucking liars.
No. Well, yeah.
And they talk about is the virus. They don't talk about the inconsistencies of the virus. They don't talk about the unnatural propagation of the virus. They don't talk about the contaminated test kits of the virus.
Or therapeutics.
They don't talk about the actual cures,
right,
that are happening, like the deoxychloroquine. Here's a beauty. They don't talk about the citizen reporters who are going around to major city hospitals and can't find any cases and find ambulances idle, the drivers reading their text messages, the EMTs idle, and the hospitals admitting we don't have an overflow of cases. So we got a stinking media pandemic. Unless Trump gets control of the media and starts showing actual, real live reality shows of the limitations of this, this is, in my opinion, no more than a nasty bronchitis that has swept several nations.
Well, now you make an excellent point, Jim, and I spoke with Chris Martinson yesterday on these same lines, because this has been on my mind now for, I don't know, a week or 10 days, trying to get ahead of things. We tried to get ahead of the virus back in January to prepare that it was coming. But now, I mean, we can't just do $10, $20 trillion of created cash and send it to everybody as unemployment checks for the next 18 months. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And so there's a point here relatively soon where we just have to say, you know what? Yeah, there's a risk in living your life, period. We can't save everybody. And that seems to be getting lost in the translation here. You know, you mentioned maybe the virus isn't as deadly, perhaps, across the board as we're being told. But yet at the same time, we're all supposed to just absolutely shudder in our basements at the thought of of what might be happening.
I got a nasty bronchitis in 2017.
Yeah, you did.
We didn't stop the world for that. That was a whole lot worse than this.
Right. I mean, that's just
maybe
it.
Maybe some people have a bad case. Okay, fine. 35,000 Americans died last year of influenza. Did we close everything?
Right.
Okay, you know, this is so sick. But there are more deaths from the Clinton gang than there are from the coronavirus.
Or the opioids, you know, with
come on. Opioid overdoses. Yeah, I mean, come on. Okay, this is a political, and then they have that piece of shit, Fauci, who stands at the side of Trump, the health czar? What are we even going to call this guy? The health czar? I call him the health czar. He's calling for national vaccinations. And I'm thinking, this is their agenda. Get the fear whipped up. Distort the news. The CNN across Latin America is an abomination. It is nothing but rubbish. This media problem is I think at the core of what we need to fix. The media is atrocious.
Yeah, I mean they just
the entire West.
Yeah, there's and, you would think that, go ahead.
No, I've laid this out for some of my less informed and less skilled friends here in Latin America. I said you've got the bad side. You got the CIA and the narcos. You got all the child trafficking and women trafficking. You got big pharma. You got the Center of Disease Control. You got the National Institute of Health. You've got the politicians lined up in the deep state. And you've got the news networks. That is your fascist system. Okay, on the other side, it's really not a lot of players. It's the good side of the military, the Pentagon, the White Hats. First America, America First generals. It's the Trump team, except for the fascist element like Jared and Pompeo and Fauci, who are now occupying seats in the same room as the president. But there's also the entire, oh gosh, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a silent majority at work, trying to open things up. The U.S. military is rescuing children who are trapped in tunnels, trapped in cages. The news network is not reporting the news. We've got a vast system now that's entrenched, and we don't have very many good elements working for democracy, liberty, freedom, pro-humanity. We don't have very many factors involved. And you know, I just hope that the good element of the U.S. military can win this war.
Don't you think, Jim, we're kind of, I mean, I don't want to say it's imminent, but there's an inflection point coming here. I mean,
yes,
like
there is.
Soon, right? Where either everybody, yeah, you know, kind of takes it into their own hands and says, look, we just got it. We can't, or you're just going to continue to get squished top down and, you know, more regulation that you can never come out of your house, that kind of thing. The end game of that, though, is what has me so perplexed, because the markets are completely in a shambles. The Fed now, yesterday, I'm sure you saw this, they're basically buying everything. I mean, there's nothing left that they don't have. let me put it this way. There's nothing left for now. Next time the Dow goes below 20,000, I'm sure they'll announce a plan to buy equity ETFs just like the Bank of Japan does. So,
okay, I have a.
Is there a limit? Let me just give me my question for you. Is there a limit? Because, you know, you got the modern money tree fanatics out there, these ivory tower people that think you can just print as much cash as you want. As long as we own the debt, it's no problem. We can print trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions. And just nobody ever has to work. Fuck it. You just feed them all a couple thousand dollars a month to help them pay their bills and everything's fine. I mean,
know how to do that. So, all they know how to do is shovel money at Wall Street. They don't know how to hand out money. How are they going to do that? What are they going to do with all the expats? They're close to a million of them.
Yeah.
Like me. Am I going to receive anything? I'm not going to receive anything. I don't even have a U.S. address. Nothing is delivered in some foreign post offices. Nothing is delivered. So they're not going to deliver it to my my bank address that I have in Pennsylvania. That's not going to work. No, where's the limit? The limit is food. Where's the limit? It's a food supply. We've already got food lines. I mean, people with some cash in their hands waiting to get food at a store. We've already got that limit hitting. And I think that's where rubber will hit the road with this deal. People with money are going to say, I need to eat. By the way, I hope that isn't a problem for you bureaucrats, but I need to eat. Is that okay with you? Do I need a permission slip? Do I have a calorie limit? I mean, what the hell is going on here? We're at the point where we're going to have massive civil disobedience. People are going to open their stores and say, you know, we got limited hours. And then they're going to be beyond their limited hours. Yeah. And people are going to go out there and say, well, yeah, I need to complete my supply chain. And others are going to say, well, we need to get food to the market. And, you know, it's going to be private, you know, non-GMO, you know, the whole works. People are going to start to say, I've had enough of this. We don't even have adequate proof that the virus is a problem. We don't have adequate proof that the testing mechanisms are valid. I mean, these test kits are contaminated. The British exposed that.
Right.
How many thousands of test kits for corona were contaminated with corona? This is starting to look like a very sinister plot. And the people guilty need to be arrested. And if they're guilty of genocide, they need to be executed by military tribunal. We've had enough of this. I talk to people around here and I say, you know, like I've got one particular guard for my building. He's a great guy and he's not dumb. He's just not educated. I said, hey, how much longer is this bullshit going to go on? Quanto más esta tontería? And he said, oh, you know, Jim, in like another week or so, people are just going to say, we don't care what the rules are. We need to go to work.
Right.
But it's not that simple because the airport is shut down. And that has harmed the hotels. They just gave an edict in Costa Rica that everybody is only obliged to pay half their rent. Now, of course, being dumbasses, they issued that order on April 6th after I paid my rent on April 1.
Right.
Okay. They're disorganized. They don't have their act together. And these little health stars in one country after another are pounding their chests like a bunch of stinking ass peacocks. Suddenly they've got all the power. You think they're going to give it up?
Right.
Okay. They're running out of time. And food is going to be a big issue. I've noticed here in Costa Rica, we're very independent. We're very self-sufficient and we're well stocked. The only thing I've seen that we don't have a lot of supply for are some of the imported things like cleansers and, you know, handy wipe for baby bottoms, some Pampers. We've got fruit all over the. We got bumper crop of fruit, vegetables, including all the things that I can't identify. Like, you know, I'm still not sure. What is that chayote? Okay. Anyway, we got fruits I've never seen before. Have you ever heard of guanabana, Craig?
Gesundheit.
No. It's a delicious. It's kind of a cross between lemon and coconut. It's a delicious fruit. It looks like hell and it's thorny, but
make a good cocktail.
It's very good. Anyway, my point is that we have no shortages. We do have the stupidity. Oh no, hey señor, mantenga tres metros. Yeah, okay. I have to maintain 10 feet when I'm in line, and I say, oh, that's for the imaginary virus, and they're so dim-witted. They say, yes, yes, yes. It's for the imaginary virus? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay, I mean, we got people following rules without any critical thinking.
Right.
Is this real? Are the tests real? Are the cases valid? Are you calling every nasty virus a corona? I got a great article that I read, not one disease, not one cure. They're calling everything corona.
Right. Have you seen the charts, Jim, of pneumonia deaths in the U.S. over the last 10 years? Have you seen that chart?
No, but
go
ahead.
It follows the same pattern every year. And the lines, just think of like nine lines, roughly within a narrow trading band. You know, they just follow each other. Just the only variance is just a total number, but they all follow the exact same pattern, right?
Yep.
This year, beginning about 4 weeks ago, the total was tracking along fine and then just fell off a cliff straight down.
The pneumonia is now falling into the category.
Yeah, because everybody that would have died anyway from pneumonia, from the flu or whatever, is just being considered instead having been COVID. And then have you heard some of the stories about there was a town in Italy, and I heard another one about a town in Belgium. Same thing. They did a one in Italy. They did a blood drive. One of those towns in northern Italy, you know, that where the epicenter of all that stuff.
Yeah, Lombard.
They needed actual blood. And so they said, only come if you've not had the virus. And so all these people show up, the 60 of them. And they said, well, first you got to do a blood test. We got to make sure you haven't had the virus. And these people said, well, I haven't had it. 40 of them had and had no idea.
Well, you know, that brings up a different point. There's a dormant, latent effect.
Well,
we've got viruses that don't do anything. It's like, you know, you've got that homeless man, he doesn't eat, and he's in your basement. Don't worry about him.
But my point is, Jim,
are you talking about false positives?
My point is they frighten everybody and tell you there's, you know, 5% or 4% or whatever, everybody that gets it that dies, just blanket everybody. But they come up with that number because the denominator is too small. The total amount of people that have actually had it and had no, you know, whatever, adverse effects, didn't even know they had it.
Symptoms.
Right. It's so much larger. So actually the case fatality rate isn't 4%. Maybe it's 1.
Well, I don't believe their tests count. I don't believe the case count. I don't believe their test effectiveness. Efficacy is their word. It's fancier than effectiveness. I don't believe anything that they tell me. There's a sector of Italy that shows their corona growth, and oh, look at that. It looks exactly like the nasty flu cases of last year. They're classifying everything as corona. And now we're going to get a gradual movement where it's going to be an acceptable practice to call anything that's nasty virus, we're going to call it corona, and we're all going to live in fear, and we're going to shut down the global economy. I got news for people. What comes next is starvation and revolt and civil disobedience and chaos.
Yeah.
They got to close this down. They got to stop this nonsense. We don't have a lot of time left. What we need is exposure of the false test kits. We need exposure of the wrong news stories, like showing New York City and claiming it, showing Italy and claiming it was New York City. Well, you take a look at there's a little sign in the background, and it's in Italian. Right. Yeah, okay, that's in New York City. Well, it's not in Little Italy of New York City. It's in Lombard region. Okay, we need to expose the citizen journalists who are going around who can't find any big hospitals overloaded with cases. We need to expose the big news corruption because I think they are central to this. I've talked to a lot of people, and two women recently told me the same thing. If you're right, then what you're saying is that all these people are lying on the news. And I said, yes.
All right, Jim. I want to veer off at this point into our second point. And we have three. People are wondering, what is the point? Well, there were actually three that we wanted to discuss. And we're going to get to gold in the final part of this. But in the middle, I think this dovetails into where eventually this was all headed anyway, and now it's just headed there. You know, somebody hit the hyperdrive, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, the stars go flying past you, and you're making the Kessel run. We were headed toward a massive debt implosion anyway. I call it the great end of the great Keynesian experiment. You know, where your amount of global debt is growing exponentially, obviously, and yet you can't grow the money supply fast enough to service, and eventually the whole thing implodes on itself. Now, all of a sudden, we're moving there pretty quickly with, what, $6, $8 trillion in posted budget deficit this year, you know, and the debt exploding globally, and the Fed having to monetize everything and buy everything just to keep the plate spinning. A lot of folks have said that what's coming is some sort of reset, debt jubilee, that sort of thing. Now, this is a long question, obviously, but the problem I've always had with that is, in a debt-based system, debt is also considered an asset. And so if you wipe out the debt, well, the person that owes the debt is like, whoopee, yay. But the person that held that debt, that was an asset. And that just gets wiped off.
Who are the owners? Who are the owners of that asset?
Okay, I suppose. I mean, that varies obviously as well. So anyway, the moral of the story is, I know you've written about this for years as well. We're certainly see it coming over the horizon at this point. Give me your thoughts on the big reset, whatever you want to call it. What comes next? Jubilee, what follows that? How this all might play out as you see it here today?
Boy, that's a tough one. And, you know, I like to give a little preface, a warning, a caveat. I don't have all the answers. All I've got is my opinions, and I try to back them up with as much information and anecdotes and, you know, gut reactions and opinions from smart people. I maintain a 9-person brain trust, the Jackass Colleagues, and not much gets past us to fool us. Not much, hardly anything. And that's one of the big advantages I have for having built this brain trust of Jackass Colleagues. Okay, that's my caveat. I don't have all the answers, but I you know, I've got a viewpoint, and you know, take it for what it's worth. In the past, maybe it's been worth pretty good stock. With good, you know, forecasts and good analysis, with a lot of help from my colleagues. But here's what I think is happening. We had the repo explosion. And what you could see with the repo volume might have been a quarter of what was really happening. The rest was underwater. Think of an iceberg. It was the Exchange Stabilization Fund. This is not new. We've had several years of the Exchange Stabilization Fund creating phony, artificial demand for treasuries. We've had 7 or 8 years of very, very little demand for treasury bonds. That is why we did QE in 2011 and 12.
Jim, hold on. Jim, I have to interrupt you. Hold on. Did you see within that $2.1 trillion first thing they did 2 weeks ago or whatever? It was actually acknowledged that there was money in there to replenish the Exchange Stabilization Fund. It was actually written into the deal. So anyway, just want to make sure.
I noticed that, and that is kind of heretical, but it's also revealing. I think Trump wants it to be known that the ESF is at work and has been at work. Okay, we created the hypermonetary inflation, monetizing the debt. They called it quantitative easing. We created that 8 years ago or more, and there was a motive. We did not want to have treasury auction defaults. We did not want to have a bond default.
Right.
We did not want to have a dollar collapse in a debt default for the U.S. government debt. So we printed money to cover the debt, and we called it a good thing, called it advanced Keynesianism, which is heresy. The buying was from the interest rate swap derivative managed by the Exchange Stabilization Fund, run by the Department of Treasury, and it's been going on for a long time with a lot of propaganda. Like in 2010, $8.5 trillion in a few month period by Morgan Stanley, but the news said that there was a flight to safety. No, it wasn't. It was trillions of derivatives leveraged to create bond demand, when there was no legitimate bond investor going to the window. Okay, so this experiment is coming to an end. Here's a big, big point. We have a volume explosion in dollar creation. Many people, I think you fall in this category, Craig. It's not a bad thing. It's just one of two different interpretations. You're going to look at it from the left side or the right side, from the front side or the back side. But a lot of people are saying this has gone out of control. The Fed is now monetizing everything. The Fed is going to take over pretty much ownership of the bond market, and that might be. Or is it the other way around? They're calling in all dollars, and they're redeeming them. They're calling it all in because they need to shut it down. Okay, let me give you an example.
Hold on, stop. So they're issuing all this debt to attract as many buyers as possible to get the dollars back brought home.
I don't think it's debt. I think it's just monetization.
But you know what I'm saying, though. Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, but it's not debt. It's not like, well, we're going to even more bankrupt. No, we're even more Weimarized.
Okay.
We got more monetary print. They need to cover. Okay, look what happened with the Fed. They extended, what was it, 2 months ago, about January or so, they extended the hedge funds. They said the hedge funds are welcome at the repo window. Now they've got corporate bonds at the repo window. Now we got foreign banks at the repo window, and we got foreign central banks at the repo window. This is like ollie-ollie infree, bring in all your dollars in bonds, whatever type of bonds, and the Fed will redeem them. They're calling in dollars from the world during the shutdown. I think it's for the reset.
Okay.
And I don't have all the detail. This is, you know, my caveat. I don't have it all figured out. But they're calling in all the dollars. They're redeeming all the dollars. And what I'm thinking is, wait a minute, you're calling all the bonds in, but you're giving them these Weimar monopoly dollars. Okay, well, what are they going to do? Okay, imagine you're South Korea. I love South Korea as an example. Let's just say they got $100 billion in treasury bonds, and they're bringing in $10 billion a week. And what are we giving them for their treasury? We're giving them dollars. Dollars, like you know, $100 bills, you know, electronic versions of $100 bills, $1,000 on an electronic account. Okay, fine. What are they doing with these dollars? Well, they're paying off other debts in Korea that are dollar-based. Okay, this is a calling in of all the dollars so that the dollars that we give them, they can use to liquidate and cancel all the dollar debt. That's part of the reset. Call in the dollars, pay off the debt, get ready for the next stage. And I don't know what it's going to be.
Right.
It's going to be digital something, Craig. I'm sorry, Lord Hemke. I think we're going to have some form of a digital dollar. And you know, here's a big question. Are we going to use the same dollar bills paper but have a different foundation that's more strong and healthy and legitimate? Well. Are we then going to take these Federal Reserve notes that are marked on our dollar bills and eventually we're going to see, oh, look at that. I got a bunch of 20s here. Most of them say Federal Reserve note, but now some of them say Treasury note. And then in a couple more months, wow, look at that. All the Federal Reserve notes seem to be going away. They're all Treasury notes. So are we going to see a hidden transition of the dollars in our hand that say eventually Treasury Reserve note? Or Treasury note or whatever, you know, some variation. But the key word is Treasury, not Federal Reserve. Okay, I think that might be coming, and I hope it does, because if they don't make this seamless, Lord Hemke, we're going to have some radical chaos.
Right, right.
What happens to all the different people who've got cash, who didn't trust the banks and have caused, you know, in a small way, their own little bank runs, and they've got $20,000 sitting in their home? What about all those people?
Mm-hmm.
Are they just going to be, oh, sorry, it's not worth anything? No. We're going to have a transition. Just a good example was the 90-day period where the Deutsche Mark, French franc, Italian lira, and whatever were all converted. 90 days were converted to euros. That was back in what, 99?
Yeah.
98?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you know, it went smoothly with a lot of bitching and moaning, but it went smoothly. We've got to do something like that on a global scale, but we can't do it with all the dollar debt out there. We need to call it home. So in a sense, what Trump might be doing here is calling in all the debts, calling in all the U.S. government debt, calling in all the corporate bank debt, calling in all the other debt, and a free pass is given to the to the bankrupt stupidity of the shale sector. They're going to get a bailout.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Have you heard of a certain category of shale oil is now negative price?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So, okay. The point is, that the crude oil market is driven by paper, driven by futures contracts, and they're being liquidated too, but in a different fashion. I'm not going to get into all that, but I would love to see a sub $10 oil price, and then for just comedy purposes, see a negative oil price and watch a couple of Wall Street banks struggle to survive.
Right.
Jeez. They deserve a good test for survival, but you know, they're going to get bailed out by the Department of Treasury, which is run by Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan.
Right.
But, you know, a big event happened. This is a quick transition, my man. I heard that two banks withdrew from the COMEX system.
Right.
And I don't have all the right terminology. Right. I think that big bank like U.S. and like New York and London. Mm-hmm. They've got to be like registered participants in the COMEX system so that they have registered and eligible gold and all the different categories. Two of them withdrew with massive losses
right.
a couple weeks ago.
They got caught with their pants down back on the 24th of March. Those were all the stories back then. And they seem to hold a lot of water. Before we get to that, because I want to close with that, let's just go back. Just to this reset thing for a second, though, because you've spoken about this for as long as I've known you. You know, the idea that as an alternative at some point to the dollar, you know, whether it's a Chinese or whether it's the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, some consortium or coalition like that, somebody offers sound money again at the end of a crisis. I mean, that's how it's worked in the past. That's what Bretton Woods was. You know, you came out of the Great Depression, you had the World War. Okay, well, we're going to back the dollar with gold so that it's sound and people have confidence in the currency again and we can build from there. I mean, doesn't it seem like that has to happen again this time?
Yeah. And I think that's what might be the plan, but we're not getting a lot of information. We're getting a lot of hints. We're getting Ripple put on the table at the same time as some of these other plans are mentioned. We got a lot of unknowns. We got 90% unknowns and 10% hints, and we're not very well informed. Here's what I think might unfold. They're going to use this medical fascist coup. That's what I'm calling it. Fascist coup.
All right.
There's been no proof of anything. There's just been declarations and propaganda on the news. Amidst this medical fascist coup, we're going to see the powers of Basel, the Tower of Basel. The Tower of Babel.
What you always called it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Tower of Basel is going to say, we've got a solution, and it's a new universal digital dollar. And they might, I don't know if they're going to call it the Phoenix, because that has been so smeared badly.
Right.
Okay, so let's just say that the United States will be the promoter, and the United States will lead the way and be on stage and have, you know, spokesman responsibility, and it'll be the new digital dollar. Well, here's what I think is likely to happen in two grand faults. They're going to make it centralized, and they're going to make it non-transparent. In other words, they're going to do exactly what the cryptos do not want. They advocate transparent and decentralized.
Right.
We're going to get the opposite of both, and I think it's going to be by force, and they require the medical fascist framework to do that.
To get you to accept it.
Right. And if you don't like it, you're not going to get your food. You don't like it, you can't travel.
And you really made a good point, Jim. I mean, the precedent, the example, is everybody turning in their lira and their francs and their marks and everything else for euro.
Yeah, well, you know, that could have been very disorderly.
Right.
And it wasn't. And, you know, there's a story behind that not very well told. The Germans did not want that. But the only way they could get acceptance of the unification of East and West Germany was to go along with this crappy little euro that was a massive failure and resulted in tremendous losses for German banks as they supported $200 billion a year for the southern neighbors. $200 billion savings per year by Germany. 10 years, $2 trillion. That's the loss for Germany. And that's why they tried to go in there and sack the different Greek assets, seize them. and Italy said no. Could that be a reason why Italy is the hardest hit in all of Europe? Mm-hmm. I tend to think yes, hell yes, hell yes. But there's more to Italy than the story we're being told, and that is that there's something like 20,000 Chinese workers in clothing factories in northern Italy trying to create their model. And they go back and forth and back and forth, and they're all put out of business. And what I'm hearing is the majority of them are now working as prostitutes.
Well, aside from that, it is the big textile producing area of Italy. And that's why, and it's the oldest demographic area of Italy. And all these people were coming back and forth. And after the Chinese New Year and all that stuff, that's why the outbreak was so bad there.
There's more to the story than that. I think that there were deposits by Langley of certain nasty strains. There's been a lot of reports that the White Hats interrupted the corona dissemination and made it a lighter version. And if so, that means that Langley has control and access of nastier versions.
Well, everybody does, I suppose. You go around the planet. I mean, that's all part of it. All right. Well, hold on, Jim. We've got by my watch, I've only got about 20 more minutes that we can go. So I've got to redirect you now to the gold market.
Okay, but what about the Jubilee? You don't want to?
No, go ahead. All right, quickly, tell me what's going to happen.
Well, I don't know. Again,
I know. I tried to bait you.
But let me just say what seems to be a reasonable path. Would you agree with the point that those who were close to bankrupt now have a lot of company?
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of cash again.
Yeah, so the shale sector and Wall Street were both in deep trouble. They got bailed out, and they blame it on the virus. Okay, fine. But now you've got pretty much the entire bond market, corporate bond market, in trouble. Okay, does it look like they might be in line for cancellation of debt, coverage of debt, buyout of debt? Give it whatever name you want. Yeah, looks very likely.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, on top of that, does it look like a lot of people are not going to be able to make their car payments or their mortgage payments?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So what we're doing is we're building the case for universal debt forgiveness.
Within the borders of each country and their currency?
I'm just thinking the United States, but what applies for the United States seems very much the case in Italy, very much the case in Germany, very much the case in England.
Japan.
Are they having a lot of trouble paying their car loans, their mortgages in England?
It's everywhere,
It's everywhere in the West, and it might be also quite prevalent in the Asia and the East. But I'm focusing on the United States because we seem to be policymakers as, you know, world leaders.
Right.
Leaders of the free world, are you kidding me? Leaders neo-fascist world.
Let's put it this way. People will follow our example or our lead. Let's put it that way.
Right, or we'll shoot them.
I know, I know. Are you
with us or are you against us?
Right.
We're doing
this,
Europe.
Keep going.
We're doing this, Europe. Are you with us or are you against us? Are you in Europe and the NATO are going to break away and be a rogue nation? Are you with us or are you against us? This is the new fascist mantra. Okay, the United States is going to lead the way.
So we're buying all this stuff.
They're making the case for universal bankruptcy, which has a universal response of universal debt forgiveness.
Yeah.
They're making the case for it. And what I'm wondering about is, what about private debt? What about, you know, Joe Blow owes 10 grand to his friend Mark Smith? Is that going to go by the books too? Is this a complete reset or is this going to be an official reset like with credit card debt, mortgage debt, car loan debt, room addition debt, student debt? Okay, those are the debts I think are going to be forgiven. And, you know, instead of just calling it universal debt forgiveness, it could be called the Jubilee. So this is where we're moving toward, and it seems like the events are lining up very consistently with that.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, I didn't even talk about the income taxes.
Well,
so let's leave that alone.
Let's go straight to gold, because I think that's a segue to that.
Okay.
I've spoken for years, and I know you have too, though, about I describe it as a pendulum, right? History is replete with examples going all the way back to the Romans of currency debasement,
to the point where the thing falls apart. It's basically valueless. And then to reestablish confidence, as I mentioned with Bretton Woods, the thing swings all the way back to the other side. You anchor your currency with some type of hard asset, usually gold. And you rebuild confidence and everything starts over. I mean, that's how it almost always works. And so now we're headed down this path toward a reset again. The problem is, since 1975, all this phony baloney gold has been created out there, right? To keep faith in the fiat currency. And nobody knows how many ounces of phony gold there are. How many unallocated, leveraged, hypothecated, whatever ounces are for every one single ounce of gold that's actually available.
COMEX, I heard it's 70,000 to one now. It blew me out of my chair.
Okay, so, all right, so we've got now what's been going on for the last 3 weeks. You referenced it earlier with bullion banks just like either being forced out of the business because they don't have the gold and just taking their losses or desperately trying to hold it all together. It's remarkable times what we're watching in dollar price gold. Do you sense, one, that's where we're going again, like I laid out, that gold is going to become an anchor again, and he who has the gold makes the rules and all that kind of stuff. And everybody we've been telling to buy gold for the last 12 years, if you didn't buy it before 1st of March, you may just be hosed because you're not going to be able to get it now. I don't know. What are your thoughts on what you're seeing? And what are you hearing? Because you've got such excellent contacts, particularly the guy you call the voice. What are you hearing about the global gold market?
It's going to be some form of digital gold. I don't know who's going to be making the rules. And whoever makes the rules is going to dictate the format. I hope it's not Basel, the Tower of Basel, because they're corrupt to the core.
Right.
I believe that they used World War II to steal a lot of gold all across Europe.
They did.
And they've never given it back. I mean, I didn't even mention, you know, the stealing the Russian gold. Well, that's never been returned.
And that's not conspiracy theory. Okay. I mean, everybody knows. I mean, that's how they all that gold went to Switzerland and it never left.
Oh, it's so much worse than that. A lot of theft of actual accounts. By the Swiss banks. I know one fellow in Ohio who's still looking to get the $5 million from his grandfather.
He's gonna keep looking too, boy.
He's never gonna get it.
Yeah. All right.
The
keep
Swiss
going.
Bankers say it's all, you know, in the fog of the war. Sorry. But he even had the bank book. He had the bank books. He had his anyway. Okay. We don't know who's gonna be making the rules. You've got to put it in the framework of this medical fascist slam. So in the midst of the medical fascist slam, who's likely to be giving the dictates for the format of the new digital gold? It's going to be coming out of the Department of Treasury because they're calling in all the dollars and they're in the position as a great vacuum cleaner to say, okay, now we're going to start disseminating. And we don't know what the source of the money in form of gold will be. There are a lot of stories. I don't want to get into woo-woo territory here, but there are a lot of stories of magnificent stores of gold wealth ready and waiting to be digitized to start the next chapter, but they're not willing to do anything during the medical fascist coup.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Right. So I think in order to have a restart on the currency, we need to stop the shutdown of the economy.
Yeah, that's good.
And that's a very important point. We can't continue with a new money system without starting the economy from, you know, just turning it back on, for God's sake. I want to go to that restaurant again. They give good meals. Well, they're not open. Okay. I've got friends who are trying to come back to Costa Rica and they can't. They're stuck. They're stuck in Texas. They're stuck in Florida. They're stuck. They got family. What the hell is going on? This is causing a breakdown of family. Okay, back to gold. Okay, the voice told me a while back, we're going to go to a gold standard for money and we're going to go to a silver standard for technology. You cannot avoid that. It is written in stone. It is agreed upon by over 100 nations. And look to see the gold silver ratio move back down to 25, something like 10,000 gold, something like 400 silver in modern day value of dollar, which is kind of an elusive concept anymore.
I suppose that's right.
Okay, so that's why he said in constant dollars. Okay, we've got Weimar America now. It's in full swing. We got infinite QE. It's in full swing. If they think they're going to go backwards now, they're crazy. They're going to go forwards with even more volume in eye-popping manner, but it's calling in dollar. Okay, I don't know who is going to be in charge once we get to a legitimate open system. If it's the Department of Treasury, then who knows? We're going to have some concoction from Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan that's not transparent. And people are going to say, well, I don't want to participate in that. I don't know where the gold is being stored. I don't know who the custodian is. I don't know what the independent auditing is all about. I don't have any proof it's valid. Okay. We don't know if it's going to be tungsten gold coming out of Fort Knox.
Right. How can that fly?
Our Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, that piece of rubbish, Mnuchin, he's got to go.
He's got a hot wife, though.
What? I don't pay any attention to women's beauty in this world. It's so irrelevant to the, you know, a good chicken dinner.
Let me get you back on track, though, because if it's not, though, if it's not transparent, you know, if they offer some kind of same old bullshit, and try to continue it off of all of this unallocated, all these paper claims, someone's going to call. That ain't going to fly. Someone that actually does have all of the gold, all of it allocated, is going to say, no, wrong, sorry, uh-uh.
They're going to make phone calls. They're going to continue their meetings in secrecy. There are lots of meetings in secrecy, lots of meetings. Trump, Putin, and Xi are meeting frequently and calling frequently to avoid global war, to avoid global chaos, and I think to interrupt and intercept this medical fascist coup in order to get something proper put in place. Okay, I think we're going to see something positive in the next few months. I think we're going to see cures. I think we're going to see the news networks commandeered in order to have proper news to stop the fear-mongering. But I want to point out something, Craig, before we run out of time. I want to point out a concept that I've recently come up with. I'm calling it the intermediary in the gold and silver market. If you look at silver right now, and you say, okay, what can I sell it for? Well, you get $12. Okay, it's a paper corrupted price. You want to buy it? Well, you can find a dealer, but good luck with that. And you know, with all the premium, it looks like it's 23, kind of like what the U.S. Mint is charging for silver coins at the ounce. So, okay, forget where the prices are set. It just looks like we got a bid at 12, and we got to ask at 23. Which is crazy. Anything more than 2, 3, 4, 5% is a corrupt market. Okay, so we've got the situation ripe for intermediaries to come in there and say, okay, we have been charged by the dealer association to go out and seek silver. And we're offering $16 an ounce. Come one, come all, we'll buy your silver because we need to supply the gold and silver dealers. And people will say, but wait a minute. It's only worth 12. What are you talking about? And other people will say, but wait a minute, I got to pay 24 or 23 to buy it. And they say, yeah, I know, we're splitting the difference. That's why we're called an intermediary. We're seeking a new alternative supply chain. And if you think the mafia is not going to be involved in that, you're nuts. They're going to be right in the middle of it. So I think an intermediary is coming in. I'm hearing it's a $300 spread for gold. Let's just say $1,600 to $1,900. So they'll come in at $1,750 and say, we'll buy your gold for $1,750. You know, screw them. They've got a wrong price for paying you for your good, honest savings of gold and silver coins. I think intermediaries are coming in. I think they're going to come in. They're going to realize there's a market. One thing that I've noticed about the black market, it is a real supply and demand market. Right. It is real.
So does that I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jim.
Go ahead.
Well, does that eventually then take the pricing
control of the pricing scheme away from the banks and the corrupt, fraudulent system?
That's pretty much what I've been saying now for 5 years. Yeah. We're going to have numerous centers, you know, Dubai, Mumbai, Moscow,
Singapore.
Shanghai, London, Zurich, yeah. New York, Hong Kong, Sydney, Australia, Singapore. They're all going to say, well, we've got a little private market. They don't want to use the word black market. We got a little private market here, and it looks like we got some stability, and it looks like it's, you know, X and Y for bid and ask. And then you're going to start seeing, well, let's average all these from the 10 cities that I just named. And it takes the control out of the COMEX, because the COMEX is gradually becoming irrelevant. They don't have any.
Right.
The dealers are now becoming irrelevant, and they do not want to continue to be irrelevant. The dealers are going to say, we need supply. We need inventive, non-conventional methods of finding supply. And they're going to appeal to intermediaries. I mean, if I were looking, okay, I've got a client, and he's in Arizona. And he said, you know, Jim, I need to sell once in a while. And I hate to sell my silver at 12. I need to sell to pay for some bills. You know, we had some medical issues, me and my wife. And, you know, I just hate the price that I'm given. Well, if an intermediary comes in and says, I'll give you 16, he might think, well, okay, that's better than the 12. And I know that if I need to replace it, I got to pay 23. But I need the money. I need to sell some. I'm going to sell to the intermediary. They're going to crop up. They're going to crop up because they must. Because the demand is there, because the need is there, because the dealers need supply. The demand is all over the place. And it's going to trump, I love that word, it's going to trump the COMEX.
I saw a thing on Twitter yesterday from Roy Seabag, the head of Gold Money Now, when they took over from Mr. Turk. And he said he's hearing rumors that the U.S. Mint is preparing to offer publicly only, and he only listed it at 50 cents over spot. But that would be, if that rumor was true, there'd be your first intermediary to buy metal from the public.
Well, I hope it happens. We need a few leading voices. But I think what is much more important is hundreds of intermediaries coming up out of the grassroots.
But if the U.S. Mint doing it, it would be intriguing that it would start at that level. But
okay,
I don't, that's a rumor.
That's great. That's great, Craig. But what that might end up doing is waving a big, big green flag for all the intermediaries to get going. Get going. It looks like we've got a clear sign here. Let's get going. Mm-hmm. So in Phoenix, Arizona, in Miami, Florida, in Dallas, Texas, these intermediaries spring up and they start offering $16 for silver ounce.
20.
And before you know it, the COMEX is going to have to respond to that and move their price to 16.
And 20.
Or else.
And 25.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's how it gets to 25.
Yeah.
This mechanism needs to be put in place in order to move the price. You can't move the price until you got a real price.
Right.
And the real price respond to real demand. The black market is your device. I'm excited by this because I think it's inevitable. And what is the casualty going to be? COMEX. I'm looking for, okay, two banks suffered big losses, as you confirmed with me, with the COMEX as they backed out in late March. Okay, are they going to have quarterly losses, or did the Fed cover that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think they're gonna announce any loss. They're not gonna want publicity
right.
like that for gold.
Right.
But we've got to get supply. We've got to get volume in the gold and silver market, because there are a lot of people who are pulling money out of their banks, and they're suspecting that these banks are gonna go under. Bank runs are about to start, and people want to put money into something real. And I think it's gonna be gold for big money and silver for small money.
Can I, before we wrap up, I just want to go back to one thing real quick. This bimetallic, bi-currency, whatever, however you want to describe it, that you said the voice talked about. The silver for technology, what was that part? Can you explain what you meant by that?
The reset was agreed upon in January of 14, and the United States violated it in 1 month by attacking Ukraine, blaming it on Russia.
Okay.
Very dishonorable. In that reset agreement, with over 100 nations participating. The deal was made. The deal was struck. The understanding was made that gold would become the monetary metal and silver would become the technology metal. There will be no bimetallic standard.
But what do you mean by technology metal?
Well, we got a long parade of new technology devices that's waiting for this medical fascist coup to end. The Navy, U.S. Navy, has hundreds of anti-gravity, free energy, telecom marvels, optic, you name it, graphics imaging, AI, robotics, all kinds, hundreds of patents and capabilities, technological capabilities, are waiting to be launched, and they're not going to do a damn thing while this medical fascist clamp is on.
But is there like a currency between technological companies that is backed in silver? I guess I'm not grasping that part.
I'm not grasping a whole lot of it either.
Okay.
And I can't get more out of the voice. But what he's saying is that there's going to be a special market.
Yeah, okay.
Set up for silver.
All right.
With global enforcement by honest people, run by the various corporations and their spokesmen and representatives, but it's going to be honest and it's going to be multinational. And he said it'll be at about $400 per silver ounce.
So it's like
get your silver, get it now wherever you can and pay up. Pay up. I mean, I don't care if people say, oh gosh, I'm not going to pay 23 because the real price is 12. No, the real price is 23 and the phony price is 12.
Exactly. The real price is what you pay for it.
Right. If you can't get it, it's not a real price.
All right, my friend. I unfortunately have to wrap up at this point. Before we go, though, please take a second. Tell everybody about the hat trick letter. But more importantly, the services that you provide, because frankly, I get asked quite frequently about, hey, do you have consulting services? I'm like, no, that's not something I do. But that is something you do, and that might be of help to people. So please describe everything that you can do for folks and what they can find at your website.
The website is www.golden-jackass.com. It's now 16 months since its launch of January a year ago. Okay, there's a subscribe button, there's a donate button, and there is a consult button. And I've noticed lately the consult button is getting a lot of activity, and it's really quite a lot of fun. I did two calls yesterday. I'm planning to do one call today. I did three calls last week. I offer 30 minutes, 60 minute, 90 minute. It's competitively priced. But the main feature is the newsletter. I mean, right. I've got, you know, many, many clients, and they're worried, and they're, oh gosh, they don't know where this is all going. And I'm noticing, you know, the old Rahm Emanuel principle, don't let a crisis go to waste. I mean, that's a paraphrase, but back in 08, I had an enormous gain of clients in my base for the newsletter following Lehman, and I'm seeing a nice jump right now. With this supposed, I call it the imaginary virus. This is a plandemic. This is a media circus around a nasty virus, which is no big deal. Okay, but the newsletter is the stock and trade. It comes out about the third week of every month. I'm going to be starting it up very soon. On the website, there's some free material. I have all the links for interviews. I don't really follow up with a second interview if someone said, well, I don't have a link for that. That's just for my people. I said, okay, well, fine. Good luck to you. We won't do another interview, but I wish you luck because I want my followers to be able to catch the interviews that I do. There's also public articles. I haven't done one since early March, and I will again soon. But, you know, you got to sign up for the newsletter. I love the compliments. I was relying on your YouTube interviews, and that was all very good, but I decided there's a lot more going on. So I signed up for your newsletter, and oh my gosh, you tie things well together. You got a lot of different information. It's very well organized. It's very logical, well written. I get a lot of nice compliments like that. And they say, I wish I'd signed up earlier and not just relied on the lazy freeloader route of YouTube's. Okay, but there's another compliment I get, and that is, I backed out 3 years ago, and I'm back now. I wish I hadn't backed out. Okay, but I've gone through some personal travails here, and it's coming in three different types. I don't want to get long-winded about this. I've mentioned it before, but I've been the victim of fraud here in Costa Rica. I've also been the victim of just lousy construction. The roof fell in because it wasn't well built. And that's the second. The third type is freak events that I cannot describe in any other way as to say this is without a doubt demonic, and I've got pretty much all my colleagues lined up with me now and several friends saying, Jim, this is several standard deviations away from normal, a tree falling on your house, a fire in your circuit box blowing a fire through your roof, an infection for your lady with breast reconstruction, a car accident with a kid killed in the middle, an eruption of your septic tank. It just goes on and on and on. I've got court orders now for wrongful death. Okay, so it's fraud and criminality like extortion, which is very common here. You pay off your car debt, well, then your car dealer will extort you until you pay enough to get your title back. Okay, so it's extortion and fraud, it's lousy construction, and it's freakish demonic events. I'm asking people to help me out. They can help in two ways. I really prefer the consult route because they can talk with me. We can have some fun. We can get to their issues. I've had several people say, I thought about hitting donate button, but you mentioned that the consult would give me an opportunity to talk to you, and hey, that was fun. The guy yesterday that I talked with, he said, Jim, that was tremendous. I'm going to do it again. A guy yesterday morning said, Jim, that was so enlightening. You got a mountain of information. You share it well. I appreciate it. Look for me to sign up for another consult fee and consult segment in a month or two because this shitstorm is not over. I said, yeah, look forward to that. But sign up for the letter. Sign up for the consult button. Give a donation. I've noticed that the donations have really ramped up in the last month because they hear my pain. People say, Jim, you know, you're a very emotional guy. You don't hide it well. We could see your frustration. But what I find amazing is even despite the pain and suffering and losses and deep stress, you're able to do your work and you're able to put it all together. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a very nice compliment. Right now I'm going to go out to the empty streets, ride my bike, go to the supermarket, buy a few things, and giggle at the people wearing a mask. That's my new thing. They have no idea what's going on.
Well, my friend, it has been it's been terrific to talk to you. And you've shared some stuff with us that I think is definitely eye-opening, as you always do. This idea I hadn't even considered, and I think you're really on to something. That this, I wrote it down, universal debt forgiveness, that the Fed is basically just buying now all of this debt out there. Just like the first QE programs were just taking all this worthless debt off the hands of the banks and giving them cash, now they're just doing it for everybody.
Well, look at the repo. They said to the hedge funds, we don't care if it's impaired. Yeah. We don't care if you're not even able to tell us who the proper owner is.
Yeah.
That's just calling it all in.
Yeah. So, I it's just extraordinarily valuable. And so I very much thank you for your time. I want everybody to, if you don't already know where to find Jim, and if you haven't already been a fan for years, golden-jackass.com. Jim, provided we're still around on Memorial Day, that's only 6 or 7 weeks away. God knows what's going to happen in the next 6 or 7 weeks.
We'll be around. I think the civil disobedience is really going to pick up.
I mean, I can't wait to. I mean, what's the world going to look like by then? I mean, things are moving so fast. It'll be fun to visit again. But for now, I guess we got to call it a day because I got to get this posted. But
okay.
It has been always wonderful to visit with you.
It's always fun, it's always entertaining, and it's always enlightening. But I think the quarantine camps that we're hearing about, I think they're going to be for the elite prisons.
Well, I don't think that would bother anybody. We'll see.
We'll see. Okay.
All right, my friend. Thanks for everything.
Thanks for everything. You too. Bye now.
Happy Easter to Jim. Happy Easter holiday weekend to everybody listening. Hope you enjoyed this. And again, have a great weekend, everybody.